Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org and also access us through the WDIY app. Today is June 8th, 2022. The markets were down today. Up, down, up, down. They were down today a little bit. The Dow closing at 32,910, the NASDAQ at 12,086, and the S&P at 4,115. Our topic tonight is trusts 101. So we're going to talk about trusts and what they're for and what they are and do you need them. You've got to think of any questions that you might have. We will take those. Eric is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. If you prefer not to speak live, just give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and he'll bring it into the studio. Again, our topic this evening is Trust 101. And my guest this evening is attorney Jim Ruggiero. He is an accredited estate planner as well and an estate planning law specialist. He received his BA from Ursinus College and his JD from Widener University School of Law. Since 1990, Mr. Ruggiero has been helping families and business owners create estate plans aimed at transferring their legacy successfully to the next generation. He's the owner of Ruggiero Law Offices, LLC, with offices in Paoli and Center Valley, Pennsylvania, where he practices in the area of estate planning, estate administration, elder law, business law, and real estate. His planning and administration experience includes the use of wills, revocable and irrevocable trust, IRA trust, and life insurance trust. He's developed a niche in dealing with closely held small business owners in advising on formation, growth, and succession of the business. He's advised clients on contract negotiations, employee contracts, and disputes, patents, copyright, real estate, lease, and purchase. He's been recognized in Mainline Today and Philadelphia Magazine as a top attorney in trusts and estates and elder law and a five-star wealth manager for numerous years. He's been an active member of numerous professional and community organizations, as well as a frequent speaker for continuing education, as well as appearing on the show. And that was me condensing the bio. Lots of great things. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Laurie, thanks for having me back. Great to be here and great to see everyone in person again, even though it's a radio show. It's nice to see everyone here in downtown Bethlehem and some of the nice changes that have gone on downstairs, I notice. A lot of progress. So we're thrilled to be here on the show again.
Yeah, well, I thank you really for coming. Jim and I met through the Estate Planning Council of the Lehigh Valley.
Yes.
And this is really a wonderful organization, and Jim's also involved in the Estate Planning Council, I think, down
in Chester County.
In Chester County. Mm-hmm. And these are really phenomenal organizations that really talk about the multidiscipline approach to estate planning, making sure all of the pieces are working together. And Jim has been on the show several times. You can go back and listen to podcasts through the WDIY website, wdiy.org, or at yourfinancialchoices.com. It's been a while since with COVID and everything, but I just am so thrilled to have him back because he's like a fountain of information. And so tonight we're going to kind of hone in on a topic that could be misunderstood. It's about talking about trust. And I know it seemed like there's ebbs and flows of when trusts seem to be in, you know, in fashion. At one time, you know, no one had trust. Then everybody had trust. Then people started saying you don't need trust. I personally think there's still a lot of reasons for having trust. So we're going to talk about that tonight.
So, Lori, thank you. And I would just like to say one of the great things about estate planning councils is their collaborative effort amongst professionals, and that's how we got to meet. Mm-hmm. And it's so important when we're working with our clients and their client families to be able to collaborate with the different disciplines that work on their behalf. So it's important to be able to talk about trust as tools for our client. I don't think they've ever gone out of fashion, mm-hmm. in my opinion, unlike my double-breasted suits that I used to have a closet full of. They're out. They're gone. They're never coming back. I did have some nice corduroy suits once upon a time as well. So things do change. But what I think goes in and out of fashion is their understanding.
There you go. That's much better. See, he's the attorney. I'm not. That's fine. That is perfect. It is the understanding. And that's why we want to talk about those tonight. So tell us, what is a trust?
So trust is created by an individual or a husband and wife, as an example. It's a written document where you can convey your property to a trustee. The spouses would be called grantors, and they would convey to a trustee their property. And that can happen while they're alive. It can happen after their passing. And these trusts can have different purposes. So again, it's figuring out what is the legacy that a family wants to leave and then working backwards. And lots of times it's appropriate to create a trust under a will. It's appropriate to create a standalone trust to hold various assets like a vacation home or something like that, things that are hard to divide, or use it what's called a revocable living trust so that you can put your property in it while you're living. And then if you become incapacitated, it's already there to be managed by successor trustees. And then after you're gone, it goes down to your children as part of an example. Think of it, lots of times it's a will substitute. And in fact, in my opinion, it's superior to a will. So a tool that people think of as a trust is something they think, well, that's for the rich and famous. It's not. It's for our middle-class clients. You know, I've created a trust to hold $38,000 because that was what's called a special needs trust. It's, again, looking at what the goal is. It's passing our legacy on in the safest way possible, using the best practices possible. So as much as we love our children, we don't know how much their spouses are going to be in love with them forever.
You know what? I love that when you said it's superior, because, you know, I love also learning myself and having guests who kind of shed a different way to look at it. Really kind of opens my eyes. And I thought when you said superior to a will, I thought, oh, I'm not sure I heard someone say that before. But when you think about it, a will is for when you're dead. It has one purpose, for when you're gone. How it could, your executor would have to manage the assets that were in your name alone. But you said a trust has so many different uses, really so many flavors. We're not just talking about vanilla ice cream. We're talking about 33 flavors or whatever the saying was, that it can be superior in that you can have one document that serves the purpose for you during your lifetime and serves the purpose for you when you're gone. It's kind of more bang for your buck.
Exactly. And it's not that much more expense to create a trust-based estate plan versus a will-based estate plan. But if you have a will-based estate plan, you're guaranteeing your family's going to have to go through the probate process after both spouses pass. If you use a living trust-based estate plan, you can avoid the probate process. And it's not a dirty word, but it can be avoided with good planning. And as you said, it helps while you're alive. You get those assets under the umbrella of your living trust so that your heirs don't have to pull together 19 different assets from different places after you're gone. And that can be a cumbersome process. As just one example, as a reason why we like to see our clients put their assets inside the living trust. And importantly, if you have a house in another state, a vacation property, you're going to guarantee probate in two states, Pennsylvania or Maryland, Pennsylvania and New Jersey, Pennsylvania and Florida, because you have your home or homes inside the names of the married couple versus their revocable living trust. So you can avoid probate in multiple states by using, for example, a revocable living trust. And it's important that you realize it's not just for somebody with, you know, a certain amount of money. It's someone who wants to help save their family money.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a lot to talk about this evening. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're speaking with Attorney Jim Ruggiero of Ruggiero Law Offices, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Psst! Did you know WDIY public affairs programs and features are available on all major podcast platforms? Listen anytime, on the go at Apple, Google, Spotify, or NPR One Podcast and Apps. Just search for WDIY 88.1 FM and you'll find a variety of award-winning public affairs programming from the Lehigh Valley. Listen and share with your friends and family where you get your podcasts and introduce them to Many Choices, Real Voices.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you can listen to us through the WDIY app or online at WDIY.org. We are talking about trusts this evening, Trust 101, some basics, because it can be very complicated, but it's complicated because there are a lot of different avenues available. That's why you work with attorneys who are familiar with this and can help guide you through, you know, the needs that you may have for your particular situation. And I'm speaking with Attorney Jim Ruggiero of Ruggiero Law Offices. And Jim mentioned a few points that I think need some additional reflection. And one is, he had said in many cases, and this is, by the way, general education tonight, folks, but he had said it, that a trust can be superior to a will, and then we kind of further explored that the trust can be used during your lifetime and can go on and serve a purpose after you're gone. I've often said to people that you can't control from the grave, but you certainly can with a trust. That's what I like to say. You can control from the grave
with
a
like
trust.
We like to say we can put guardrails in place to protect your children from themselves and from others.
Yeah.
So they're not puppet strings. They're guardrails and guidelines.
And what I love about, too, what you kind of had said, Jim, is you said you can't always control who your children might marry. You might not be able to control the kind of adults that your children end up becoming, if they're going to be spending money, going through money, you know, whatever, have substance abuse problems. So it is kind of a way to put some, or creditor issues, some protections ahead for situations that you can't anticipate. So I want to talk a little bit about that. But first, I do want to mention that Jim's, I don't think, saying don't have a will, folks. You know, there are some documents everyone needs, and that would be include a will. But the trust just provides some flexibility. So let's talk a little bit more about that.
And let's do that, because everyone who has a revocable living trust that I create has what's called a pour-over will. And what it simply means is the will would flow into that trust. And so a married couple can have one trust that lays out their estate planning goals for their children and what happens if they become incapacitated. And that's really important. So if one spouse dies, the other spouse doesn't automatically have the ability to change the will and disenfranchise children from a prior marriage. With your joint living trust, you can make administration a lot easier. And you can make sure that, you know, this handoff happens simply. I'll give you an example. A client died with a will. We needed to get control over his assets held at a large mutual fund company that I shall not name. But it took 6 weeks to get control over those assets because it had to go through probate. If it was inside a trust, it would have taken days versus weeks because it's already inside the trust, and they would have just needed to receive a death certificate to show that the trustee died and the grantor died, and there's the language that says here's the successor. Mm-hmm. So tools to make life easier. Don't we want to have 64 crayons in our Crayola, you know, crayon box versus the small box? I mean, I like to have options. Yeah. So we create more options for our clients with the use of trusts.
And so let's talk a little bit about a living trust, because sometimes people will think it's going to be very burdensome and they don't want more paperwork, and maybe they don't want to open up new accounts and things like that or get an employer identification number. So some trusts have tax returns you have to file, but not necessarily for a living trust. So kind of go through how this can work when someone's alive, they have capacity still. And what does that kind of a trust look like and work?
And that's very important to know the difference. A revocable trust from a tax status is what's called a grantor trust. So it doesn't have its own separate tax identification number. It's the Social Security number of the grantor. So any tax information that would be issued to the trust flows on to the individual or husband and wife's tax return. So there's not a separate tax return. It's viewed as the alter ego of the husband and wife in the eyes of the IRS. So when someone dies, we have to open up new accounts. When someone dies, we have to get a new tax identification number. When someone dies, we have to transfer all of the assets after they're gone out to their beneficiaries. Our clients have the ability to take care of it while they're alive. It's a lot less cumbersome to do it while they're living. It's a lot less expensive to do it while they're living. Yes, you need to fund the trust. What do I mean by that? Create new deeds and put the real estate inside the trust. Create new accounts and transfer the assets that they have that they can transfer into the trust inside the trust. Change beneficiary designations on life insurance and things like that. But all those are good, positive things. And then once all of that's done, if you need to change your plan, you just need to change your trust document. Right. You don't need to change ownership on all those different assets. You don't need to change beneficiary designations on all those different assets. You've got one umbrella that is covering all of your assets, and you need to make changes. You go to one spot. Isn't that better than having to change 19 different assets later?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my opinion.
Yeah. Now, Jim, you had mentioned, and I think a lot of people on the East Coast, and well, not a lot, I shouldn't generalize, but there are many people who have like a home on the shore or have the winter birds have summer birds fly down to Florida in the winter. So you had mentioned that sometimes that would especially be appropriate when you have multiple jurisdictions to have a trust. How complicated is it to put a piece of real estate in a trust?
I would tell you it's not complicated at all. When you have the deed for the existing property, it's simply a matter of creating the new deed from the old deed. Using that legal description, it's from husband and wife to husband and wife trustees of that Florida house or that New Jersey house, getting it filed at the recorder of deeds in the county where that property is located. It's a simple recording fee. Lots of times local title companies can assist with that to make sure it gets done properly in whichever state the property is being conveyed from the individuals to the trust. You should understand one of the reasons why these things are so good is if you make Florida your primary residence, you go from snowbird to full-timer, more than 183 days there, but keep your house in Pennsylvania, your children who live in PA can't be your executor in Florida because they're not Florida residents. So they can be trustees of your revocable living trust, but Florida's got it wired so that you've got to be a Florida resident or attorney or CPA to handle the executor role, generally speaking.
I did not know that. Oh, okay. So, but if you have an attorney who's representing you in Florida, that would work if you were a...
You'd have to get the Florida attorney appointed.
Okay.
In situations that I've seen. So if your kids aren't in Florida... Again, it's a problem that you think your children are going to do it if you have a will-based plan. I mean, that's just one example. Probate can be a word that people think is a problem. I don't call it a dirty word, but I call it something that can be avoided by good planning. Mm-hmm. And there's where trusts avoid going through the probate process. The average probate takes 12 to 18 months in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Okay, why would you subject your family to that if you can get it done in 6 to 12 months?
Okay. I want to remember to ask you a question when we come back from this next break. Folks, if you have questions, you can talk live with us on air or give your question to Eric, who's in the studio, and he'll write it down and bring it in to us. The phone number to call is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And I have with me this evening attorney Jim Ruggiero of Ruggiero Law Offices in both Center Valley, Pennsylvania and Paoli. And we are talking about trust this evening and kind of the basics. They can get quite complicated. And basically, I think anything that you can imagine that you need, an attorney could probably help figure it out with you, and using trust is one of those ways. I just want to go to one thing, Jim. When we talk about probate and avoiding probate, that's great. We might avoid some probate fees. As you said, it's not a bad word. Pennsylvania probate's not bad. Florida probate is a nightmare. So it kind of all depends on where you are, where you have property. But there are sometimes also other kinds of administrative fees that an executor, I find sometimes, and we could talk about the roles a little bit, because sometimes I think people get confused of the role of an executor and the role of a trustee. And if someone, there might not be any assets in the estate, and someone will say, well, I'm the executor, and they might not have even had to probate. But who in the end ends up being responsible for kind of the administrative expenses of either the estate or the trust? How do you manage that? Because if we don't have an estate and the trust has all the funds and the will says pay all my funeral and administrative expenses and my debts, and you know, there might be some inheritance tax. Talk to us a little bit about how you coordinate the executor and or trustee role in those documents. And I'm doing this because I know it can be done. So that's why I'm asking you the question.
Well, I appreciate the easy question because you've already answered it. Inside both documents, you coordinate the role of trustee and executor. Inside your living trust, you will instruct your trustee to coordinate the payment of the administration expenses of your estate, your inheritance taxes, any final taxes, any last illnesses, all those things. So if there is no money in the estate because you've done the planning, and that means that you owe inheritance taxes, but you direct your executor to pay the transfer taxes, inheritance tax, and they don't have the money, it will come from the assets inside your revocable trust. Because of the nature of this trust, it doesn't get to stiff your creditors who are entitled to be paid by your estate at the end. The goal is not to do that. It's not an irrevocable trust. Now, we will create irrevocable trust to avoid inheritance taxes, if that makes sense, to avoid certain taxes, to avoid creditor, you know, levying on those assets. But it is just simply putting it together, and it's A plus B. So it's a pour over will with a revocable living trust. And you don't have one without the other. They go hand in hand. But again, the good news is, since the changes in the tax laws that took effect in 2013, you only need one revocable living trust. In the olden days, from 1990 to 2013, I had to create revocable trust for both husband and wife and segregate their assets when we had to worry about the federal estate tax, which we're not talking about tonight, because unless a family's got $26 million, that's just not something on the table. But this is why it's important to understand trusts are for average folks who want to protect their children and grandchildren from divorce, from creditors. If you have a loved one with a substance abuse problem, as you mentioned earlier, you can make sure that they're not going to get easy access to the trust fund monies where they're just going to go out and kill themselves. I mean, you just want to make sure that your children and grandchildren get the benefit from your legacy, but it doesn't get squandered.
Right, right. That they don't inherit so fast that they don't know what hit them like the lottery winners.
And exactly. You don't want a 21-year-old getting a couple million dollars because you left it and they get it at the age of majority. You know, that's a problem.
Let's talk about some of the assets that one might put into the trust. So there's, you mentioned earlier that you can retitle assets to put into the trust. You can retitle the real estate. You could retitle brokerage accounts or bank accounts. What about, let's talk for a moment about retirement accounts, because retirement accounts can avoid probate by having a beneficiary designation. So one might just say, well, hey, Jim, I can avoid probate by naming individuals as beneficiaries on my retirement accounts, which in certain circumstances could be totally fine. They might not have that creditor protection that they would get through the trust or whatever. But how does one, or does it make sense today, because there's also been some changes in some of the tax laws, how complicated is it to have a retirement account with a beneficiary as a trust versus an individual?
My answer is you've just hit one of my hot buttons.
Okay.
Oh, all right, boy. That I'm very upset about. One of the largest middle class tax increases that was a stealth tax increase was something called the Secure Act.
Yes,
that took effect January 1st, 2020 and blew the best planning I've done, creating standalone retirement trusts for grandparents and parents to leave money to children where the children would not have access to that money until they hit retirement. Mm-hmm. And so that money was able to accumulate tax deferred or tax free. And now, as a result of the Secure Act, other than spouses and other certain exceptions, you must take all of the money that you inherit from a retirement account as a child from a parent out within 10 years. Mm-hmm. That's the Secure Act. Rather than taking it out over your 40-year life expectancy, the federal government has accelerated the income tax collection on all of these retirement assets. And because it happened and took effect right when COVID took place, most people still don't realize the negative impact it has on middle-class America. Lots of times your family's largest asset that you're going to inherit from a parent is a retirement account. So years and years of tax planning that we recommended to clients has been thrown out the door.
I agree completely. And it's going to accelerate distributions of retirement accounts into some of these people's highest earning years themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. You've got an 80-year-old parent that dies and leaves something to a 50-year-old child who's in its highest earning years. That's why I'm saying it's a gigantic tax increase, because these people are going to be forced to take this money out during their peak earning years, mm-hmm. where in the past they could defer mm-hmm. the distributions until they were in a lower tax bracket in their retirement years. Mm-hmm. So taxes are a dirty word to me. All right.
So, well, because you hit it. This isn't, you know, the rich and famous we're talking about. I think right. You hit it when you said middle class. It is going to be, it's going to be a surprise.
You're looking at shrinkage of 30-35% in Pennsylvania. As an example, if you're in the 28% tax bracket plus a 4.5% inheritance tax, there's 32.5%. There's a third right there. Which is why it's so important for you to do another show on Roth conversions and why people who become newly retired really need to spend 20 years converting their traditional accounts to Roth accounts, 5% a year, so that they can spend them in their retirement, but what's left can go to their children with the parents already having paid the income tax on the money. And I encourage my clients to spend all of their retirement assets.
Right,
okay,
right.
Leave the rest of the money to their children in trust.
Oh, there you go. So we want to talk then, when we come back from the break, a little bit more about then if we could still use trust for the beneficiaries despite the acceleration, or you know, I think it's going to be a case by case and depends, but we will talk a little bit more about that when we come back from the break. And then we're going to talk about some of the reasons to form a trust. If we haven't demonstrated that already, we're going to give some specifics. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can give your question to Eric and he can write it down and bring it into us if you're not comfortable talking live on air. But we love when you call and talk live on air, and he'll let us know that you're going to be on air. So again, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY Allentown, the time is now 6:30. It is 80 with clear skies right now. Tonight is going to be low around 66, and for Thursday it's going to be showers, high 78, and Thursday night 54. And for your Friday, it's going to be mostly sunny, high 78, and Friday night low around 60. And for Saturday, you can have showers and 71 degrees, and Saturday night low 55. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Hi. Well, thank you, Shandi. Welcome back. This is Lori Siebert. We have attorney Jim Ruggiero with us this evening talking about trust, the basics, and he is with Ruggiero Law Offices in Paoli, Pennsylvania and Center Valley. And in the past, prior to COVID, a frequent guest on the show. So we hope that we can get Jim back to talk about some of these very relevant topics that need attention, especially when, you know, supposedly only half the people have their estate planning done or estate planning documents in this country. So we really want you to work on that. I always say plan and hopefully nothing will happen. So we were talking about retirement trust you had mentioned and how the SECURE Act kind of put a little spear in our planning, because I agree with you completely. I was having clients like name their grandchildren as beneficiaries of Roth IRAs.
What a fabulous plan. Yes.
That's, you know, gone out the window, basically. Well, maybe not the Roth, but it's going to accelerate no matter what. We don't want a 15-year-old inheriting a million-dollar Roth IRA either, but that's where the trust comes in. So
and that's
tell
a great
me,
reason to do a standalone retirement trust.
Okay.
So they still work. You just have to understand the potential limitations. So if you want to make sure that a spouse has the ability to benefit from your retirement assets after you die, but doesn't have the ability to redirect them after you're gone, you use a standalone retirement trust so that it will pass to children from a prior marriage, for example.
Can we unpack that just a little bit, Jim? So what you just said is if you have two spouses, you could use this retirement trust for the surviving spouse, especially when there's children from a previous marriage.
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons why we like to keep it in place. We can also benefit children who have special needs, because then the distributions can stay inside the retirement trust and accumulate. They're not forced to take them out over 10 years if they have special needs.
Mm-hmm.
And Roth IRAs are not subject to income tax because they've ever been paid. So if you've got a million-dollar IRA, it's a prime candidate for a standalone retirement trust, because even though the money will have to spin out, quote-unquote, to the individual, you can still accumulate that money inside the trust without having a giant income tax problem.
Right.
The real problem exists with traditional retirement accounts. Under the new changes from the SECURE Act, the money must come out in 10 years, not over 10 years, but just in 10 years. And the regulations that have been proposed are not finalized yet, but you could take it all out in year one or year 10. But imagine you just inherited a $750,000 retirement account and you have to take it all out in 1 year. You're going to be at the top tax bracket for federal, state, and local. So again, depending on what state you live in, you could see a 55% loss on that money. So there is a benefit to create a standalone retirement trust and have the ability to have a trustee toggle it. they could distribute out the income as a conduit trust, but if need be, accumulate the income inside of it. And think about this. Even if you know it has to come out over 10 years, you've still gained 10 years of creditor protection, mm-hmm. divorce protection. So there might be a shelf life and an expiration date on any traditional retirement assets that flow into a standalone retirement trust. You still get the benefit of having that insurance policy in place for 10 years.
I want to go back to that for a moment, too, because for listeners, when Jim mentioned creditor protection, there was a case that said, we think often that retirement accounts have some kind of creditor protection, but there was a case where there was an inherited IRA that the court came back and said, no creditor protection for this beneficiary, and they got it. And that's kind of what you're talking about?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. There is no creditor protection for an inherited IRA. There's creditor protection if it's your own IRA or your own 401k under state and federal law. But when you inherit the IRA, the Supreme Court has said, I believe in 2014, and it was an Alaska case, and it's been a little bit. I have COVID fog. I can't remember the name of the case today, but it says that the beneficiary who was an adult child lost that resource when they declared bankruptcy. It was an asset that was delivered to the trustee to be distributed out to the creditors. So it is about creditor protection. It's about, you know, protecting from divorce as part of an overall strategy and how to benefit your children and your grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of variables, but, you know, again, generally speaking, this type of trust is a great tool. It is superior than just leaving it outright to my adult children in equal shares.
Mm-hmm. Can we go to the divorce issue for a moment? So let's pretend we have an estate that passes out $500,000 to two kids each, $500,000, and both the children are married, but one's in a sticky marriage and divorce ensues within 2 years of this inheritance of $500,000. Can you kind of describe, if that money were to go outright, $500,000, to my child who's in this sticky relationship, there could be exposure that the spouse could inherit some of the money that my child was going to inherit?
Absolutely, yes. And let me explain what happens. You know, no good deed goes unpunished. You've saved all of your money. You left each of your children $500,000. That's a blessing. However, you left it to that child outright because they're mature and I trust them. Okay, well, that's not the best practice because you left it outright to them. They got a check and then they put it in a joint bank account. So under Pennsylvania law, an inheritance is a non-marital asset. But the moment you convert it from a non-marital asset to a marital asset, you're done. So by putting it into the joint bank account and then investing it, you've created a marital asset that can be divided in the event of a divorce. So right there, a simple act of putting in the joint investment account, which is what most couples will automatically do by mistake, by design. And then things, you know, happen 3 years down the line. You're like, oh, I wish I never did that. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? If you created that trust under the will or the living trust or the standalone retirement trust, you've segregated that money. I like to advise my clients, you're creating a safe deposit box for your children's inheritance, and you're leaving them the key. They're the only ones with the key. Now, you can add co-trustees, corporate trustees. You have the ability to name other individuals to assist with the process, but we want to use best practices. And so the use of trust, to me, is the use of best practices. So let's divorce proof, let's creditor proof inheritances, because we can do it automatically without a lot of fuss, add a lot of must.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give the phone number again really quickly. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with us or give your question to Eric, if you're not comfortable talking live on air. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Let's talk about some other uses for trust. So we've talked about creditor protection, divorcing spouses. You had mentioned earlier real estate. Now, let's say you have that vacation home. You've had it for years. The kids have always gone there. We've all gathered together. And now the children say, we want to preserve that. We want to keep that house forever. And you got three kids, and they're in different states maybe. Is that a good candidate for a trust? And then how? What kind of trust would that look like?
So it is a great candidate for a trust if you feel that your children can get along in the future. So one of the problems that we have with vacation homes is it's never a third, a third, a third. So it is important to address this with your clients because it's a dream. My children are all going to cohabitate in that vacation house and everything's going to go swimmingly. And I've seen it happen occasionally. And your children might get along, but I guarantee you, your grandchildren are not all going to get along, and they're not all going to live in the same place where it's easy for them to utilize it. But it is nice to put it into trust so you can determine what happens when one of the children wants out. Just leaving it outright to three children creates a problem because you now have three partners in a general partnership, right, which is a real estate partnership. So they're all responsible for the taxes, the maintenance, the upkeep. So a trust to lay out how this is going to work is a good idea, in my opinion.
And just make sure you have some funds available to pay the bills.
You need to dedicate $100,000 over time to take care of the beach house or the lake house if you don't want them to dig into their pocket. So part of the creation of the trust, as you said, for the house means putting money in the bank. Because real estate is an asset that requires money to flow into keeping that asset in shape. I would say real estate, while it's an asset, is also a liability. Mm-hmm. Taxes, maintenance, mm-hmm. upkeep, insurance. Every year you've got to pay whether you want to or not. Unlike if you've got stocks in the market, you have to pay taxes if you're a winner and you sell and you make your gains. But otherwise, you can buy it and hold it and not subject be subject to taxes under the current tax laws.
Right. So with these trusts ongoing, you mentioned trustees. You mentioned maybe things change over time. How often should you review trust documents? How often should you review maybe even the people that you're going to appoint?
So I will tell you that, generally speaking, I'm a fan of every 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
Depending on your age, depending on what's going on in the world, if something changes in your life as an executor dies, then you need to contact your lawyer. If the law changes, it's on us to let you know that. So, but a regular plan of maintenance is important. We see people that don't do anything, and all of a sudden they wake up and both their executor and their alter executor or trustee or co-trustee are gone. There's a death in the family. People change what their goals are. So like anything, you've got to do the maintenance with your documents and your plan because the law changes, the facts change. So it's always good to stay current. Now, it doesn't need to be every year. We like to talk to our clients on an annual basis to make sure that we know what's going on in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just set it and forget it.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And with the trust documents, there's also, or will or whatever, a coordination. When we talked earlier about coordinating with other professionals, sometimes there are accounts out there that might have beneficiary designations. It could be individuals. It could be a trust. Whatever it might be, you want to make sure you're reviewing that as well.
Absolutely. When we do the annual review, we ask for any new accounts that are opened, any real estate that's purchased. You'll be amazed at how many times the client forgets to call us and tell us they're buying a house in Florida, or they let us know after the fact, I just closed on my lake house. Should I have put that inside my trust? Well, of course, the answer is yes, and you should have called us beforehand, but we can still take care of it after the fact. But when we talk about houses and trusts, I think it's important to talk about irrevocable trusts for seniors and how families can preserve the real estate and protect in the event of, you know, we've got families who could have a loved one go into a skilled nursing facility. People are always worrying about, am I going to lose my house because my husband went into a nursing home? The answer is no, you don't have to. You've got the ability to create a Medicaid asset protection trust and transfer the real estate into that trust. And if it's inside that trust for 5 years, and then a loved one needs to go into a nursing home, it's not a countable resource. You can't be forced to sell your home, which is one of your biggest assets, to pay for your husband or your wife going into a nursing home. And by creating that transfer, you set up the ability to guarantee an inheritance for your children. So if your house is your biggest asset and you're in your 70s, you might want to consider, if it's paid off, conveying it into an irrevocable trust to guarantee that it passes down to your children, because we know the cost of skilled nursing can be, you know, $150,000 to $180,000 per year. That will quickly eat up all the equity in a home. And if you've got a $500,000 home and you want to pass it to your children, that matters. So there's where, you know, it's not about being a millionaire. It's about using the tools that are available and taking permissible actions for estate planning under federal and state law.
Okay. Boy, we're really making the case for some trust uses tonight, so I appreciate this discussion. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking with Attorney Jim Ruggiero of Ruggiero Law Offices. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Also, podcasts of prior shows available at WDIY.org or YourFinancialChoices.com. I'm speaking with Attorney Jim Ruggiero of Ruggiero Law Offices in Paoli, Pennsylvania, and Center Valley, Pennsylvania. And we're talking about kind of some basics of trust. And I love that it feels more almost like a kind of a brainstorming session tonight, just throwing out a bunch of different ideas to get the juices flowing of thinking and reflecting upon your own situation and where you might see those threads go. That's how my brain works. I'm always following these threads. And if you kind of take them out, it helps you kind of come up with solutions for your planning. And as Jim said, it's more important for us to know what the planning is prior to your decisions than after. I end every show saying be proactive, not reactive. There's a lot more options for people ahead of the decision than after the decision. So that's why we love bringing this program to our listening audience, to get you a little bit, you know, provide some information, some educational, some tools to help you in your own planning. So, Jim, we've talked about revocable trust, living trust, a little bit on irrevocable trust for, you know, real estate. We know, or some of us know about irrevocable trust for life insurance back in the day. There's still some of that going on. Less need for that with this huge exemption for federal estate tax purposes that we currently have. But we have seen in our planning, as Jim mentioned earlier, with the retirement accounts, we have seen legislation change and flip on us. We can put in a really great plan and then there could be changes. So you definitely want to make sure that you're working with an attorney who understands the language that needs to be included in some of these documents, because it can provide some of that flexibility. I know sometimes people use, trust protector. That's yes. The word. Yeah. Trust protector. So let's talk just for a minute about how this trust planning can make it easier for your loved ones when you are thinking it through now while you're capable and alive, rather than leaving kind of a mess for your loved ones.
So families often tell me what's important to them, and it's important for their children and grandchildren to be healthy and to get the opportunity to get the best education possible. So you can set up a trust with specific goals in mind to emphasize education and health and wellness for your children and your grandchildren, not just a normal trust where they can get 5% a year out, things like that. You can create a trust that's supposed to last for multiple generations. You can direct your life insurance to flow into a trust like that. And one of the benefits of that, you know, doing that is you're able to, map out a plan for future generations and avoid future tax problems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, lots of my clients don't have children. So then the question becomes, what if they have charitable goals and they're going to leave a substantial sum of money to charity? I advise creating a trust so all that money doesn't hit that charity at once, and so it can go out over a measured period of time. You can give it to that charity or charities that you care about over 20 years. So you can create a trust that will benefit charities. It can also, if you have children, create what's called a charitable remainder trust, where money can be left to benefit the charity, but still give income to your children while they're alive. So there's also something called a charitable lead trust as well. I think people need to incorporate more planning for charities as part of their overall goals, because if we don't have enough support for our charities, we're not going to be able to help the people and the other, you know, pets, you know, in this country, our causes that matter to us. Mm-hmm. So doing the planning is important. We just had a discussion today with a client trying to determine which bucket of money should go to the charity and how should it be held. And we talked about creating a trust for a charity for her retirement account and explaining that this was better than just leaving a percentage of her overall estate, 20%, to the charity, because we give the retirement account to the charity, there's no income taxes.
Right. And that's what I think is really people have heard when you become required minimum distribution age, that there's something you can do called a qualified charitable distribution. It is a great way to give during your lifetime. Jim had mentioned earlier, hey, work down those retirement accounts, because they're going to cause endless income tax consequences to, you know, the future individual heirs. But you can make your charitable intent through those IRAs during your life with qualified charitable distributions. And at your death, is what you're saying, you could continue to make some charitable giving or fulfill your charitable intent using the retirement accounts would be the place to go. So if someone has a Roth IRA and maybe they have kids or nieces or nephews or a neighbor, individuals that they want to give something to, a Roth IRA that's tax-free, boy, I'd put that in the bucket for the individuals. But if they want to do
inside a standalone retirement trust, yes. But think about the trust for the charity with your traditional retirement accounts as QCDs after you die.
There you go.
Rather than having them get it all at once, just like you don't want a 20-year-old child to get it all at once, you spread it out over time. So you can make, you know, we're calling it post-mortem QCDs by creating a trust for the benefit of that charity. Again, there's superior tax implications for leaving retirement assets to charities. The benefit of a trust is to help your charities, you know, use the money over time and plan for it over time, because they know it's going to be coming over a multi-year period, rather than get an influx of $1 million all at once and somebody's got a budget of $100,000 a year for a local charity, a nonprofit. All of a sudden they're swamped and they might not be ready to handle the extraordinary influx of cash, just like an adult child. You have to realize that most nonprofits are small and run locally. So some national ones have the ability to absorb a big influx of a gift from a donor. But smaller ones, I would submit to you, might not be ready, haven't done the long-range planning that needs to be done.
Yeah. So that's a great idea. I haven't really seen that.
Just invented it.
So talk to me, though, for a minute, because you might have someone. So now, if during my lifetime I am thinking this is a great idea, I could do my charitable giving kind of like donor advised funds, do it over time. But there's always someone who's granting those donor advised funds. So in this scenario, this is in a trust, could be my retirement accounts. But because my taxable retirement accounts are going to charity, it would be income tax free if this trust was set up to go purely to charity.
Yes.
But it's over time. Who's making those decisions? And how does one decide what charities, is there a trustee? Is the trustee given flexibility on identifying those charities? Or do I, as the grantor of that trust, have to make that decision before I go?
So the answer
How flexible
is
it?
So the answer is no, you don't have to make that decision before you go. All the things that you just talked about, to me, that's the fun part. It is, because you can work with your children. You can work with your grandchildren. We're going to make you the successor trustees. We're going to make you the stewards of this money. And again, it doesn't, again, you know, if you don't have children, you're going to make relatives or a corporate trustee be a good steward and give five charities the opportunity to get a distribution of X amount of dollars a year, but have them submit the grant proposal to receive the annual distribution.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be automatic. It can be merit-based. You can get a local community foundation to handle the distribution out. For example, you can have your standalone charitable trust that has your assets, but you can have a corporate co-trustee. You can have a local community foundation who is better in tune with those charities inside your community after you're gone, you know, apportioning it amongst the ones that need it the most.
Mm-hmm.
So think about that. You designate education. It could be for scholarships for individuals. It could be for books for a library. It could be to help get new equipment at different schools, at different after-school education spots. I mean, there's just so many different variations that you're making me think of here. We could really get lost in it, but I'm saying it's the fun part. You want to leave a legacy to support your charitable intent. It just doesn't have to be one charity. It just doesn't have to be one amount. So you're able to be flexible and know that, to me, helping feed that charity for 20 years is a better goal than giving them one big meal. One big Thanksgiving is great, but how about 365 days a year you're going to help support them?
Yeah, that's great, Jim. I really like where you're going with some of these things. So, folks, we are just brainstorming, and we're probably out of time for questions. We still have a few minutes left, but I want to make sure that, Jim, if people want more information, do you have a website or a phone number?
So we do have a website. It's www.paolilaw.com. That's P-A-O-L-I-L-A-W. As a kid, I like to watch L.A. Law, so I named my website Paoli Law because that's where my first office started. I wish I would have gone bigger back in the 90s when I created my website. But our one of our direct lines is 610-889-0288 to reach out to us at Ruggiero Law. But we're happy to answer any follow-up questions. You can send us an email at info@paolilaw.com. If you have a question that you didn't want to have answered on air tonight, you can call us or go to our website for more general information. But I want to say to everyone who listened, thank you for listening, but understand that every family situation is different. Don't think it's not for you until you try it. You know, some people like chocolate, some people like vanilla. There's no one perfect answer. You know, wills are an important part of a plan. Trusts are an important part of a plan. Some people might not need a trust. Okay? Some people would think they don't need one, but they do need a trust. And again, there's different types. So without knowing what all of your choices are, you can't make an educated decision. That's why it's so important for them to use professionals like yourself, Lori, to know what they're doing when it comes to tax time and investing their money, things like that. We're here to create the boxes as the lawyers. We're here to make sure that the plan flows from one generation down to another and protect the legacy that you've worked so hard to save as a family.
Well, and I hope that we've raised, I like to tell people, you know, little flags should go up. So some of the flags that should go up, I would think from our discussion tonight, might be blended families. Could be a candidate for a trust. Creditor protection could be a candidate for a trust. Maybe children in marriages.
One we haven't really touched on tonight, children with special needs.
Mm-hmm.
Adult children with special needs can have their own special needs trust created by family members. Children that are bipolar, children on the spectrum, children with physical disabilities. these things are really, you know, pain points for parents. You've got adult children who will always need your help. So yeah. I would submit to you that you've got to do planning around those loved ones with special needs, and that's its own separate whole show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll have to make sure that we have you come on for another show. And any parting words? We have 1 minute left.
Failing to plan is planning to fail. I did not invent that line, but it's words to live by. Take the time and update your estate plan or put one in place, because it's more important than planning for your next vacation.
Very good. It really is. Thank you so much, Jim, for being here. And thank you to your wife, Beth, who was very helpful in coordinating everything. Thank you, Eric, for being here. Thank you, Shandi, for being here as well. Next week, I'm going to have topic takeaways from prior shows. So I'm going to scroll through some prior shows and pull out the golden nuggets. And I'm sure I'll have some golden nuggets from tonight's show. So that's what we'll do next week. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Lori.